this summer we got to go to the beach. We went to Tofino with the family, went surfing, and have you ever experienced that with the waves? Let me rephrase that. Have you ever experienced that with the waves of life? Yeah, you just keep trying, and you're like, God, what is going on? I'm putting my best effort in, and it's just not working. I'm building this kingdom, and it crashes down. God, I'm asking for your help, and it's just not working. God, I want to be where you want me to be, and I'm doing my best, and it's not carrying through, right? Well, before we go into our sermon, which is all about that, I want to give a few of you a reminder, and some of you a first notice. We are having an all-hands meeting. If you don't know what that is, anybody who volunteers anywhere in the church, we're having a meeting on the 19th of September, just to regroup, to regather, to talk about vision, to commission us to what God has called us to, and to pray for one another. We want to give you some skills in competency and some skills in character development, so that when we are gathered together and we are called to serve, that we do that to the best of our ability, and we can be aware of things like the moon and the waves coming in and directing things, and we can follow God's course as a team. So this summer we've been going through the story of Joseph, and I want to remind you where we are in the storyline. It's just like those waves crashing in. Professionally, Joseph, he's in this entirely new space. He's been appointed to a government job, and he sits in a position of power. And the dream that he had once, years and years ago, it's now come to fruition. But it's not been an easy journey. For the last 13 years, he's had his ups and downs, just like the tide coming in and out. It all started with a dream. God planted this dream in him that one day he would lead. But those around him, they didn't like the favor that God gave him. So his brothers, in jealousy, they threw him into a pit. And eventually they sold him into slavery. Then these Midianite traders, they came and they took him off and they sold him to Potiphar, where Joseph rose to lead Potiphar's house, the captain of the guard. And again, Joseph, he faced a trial. And this time it was on his integrity. Potiphar's wife had him falsely sent to prison. Back out, down again. But once again, blooming where God had planted him, before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. God was with Joseph. And eventually he's brought before Pharaoh, and through miraculous circumstances, he interprets a dream for Pharaoh and is given a plan by God and becomes the highest official underneath the king. And that's where we are today. Here we have Joseph in an entirely new place, in a new position. He has everything that he could have ever imagined. Every box has been checked. Every dream has been accomplished. He's leading and guiding the nation of Egypt, second only to Pharaoh. And perhaps you know what it's like to accomplish some career goals in your life. Maybe you didn't achieve as high as Joseph did. But maybe you were the first to graduate from high school or college. Maybe you got your certification. You got your graduate degree, your master's degree, your doctorate. Maybe you didn't go with the education route, but you got a promotion that you long aspired for at work. The boss looks at you as one of his most important employees. Maybe your business is thriving. Or maybe you've even retired. And now you can look back on a successful career with a great... You've reached that point of success. And now you can look back and cherish all that you've accomplished in life. And this can be a significant moment for you to realize and celebrate all that progress that you've made. Good for you. Work hard with the gifts God has given you. But personally, when we read through this story, Joseph is in a different place. It's interesting sometimes how these two worlds can collide. Work and life. Work and home life. Sometimes you can be succeeding in your career, growing confident, accomplished, respected, ambitious. Times when you're fulfilled in your work life, and yet your work life, it doesn't match your personal life. Have you ever felt that tension? We all wish both of them were aligned. But many of us know what it's like to love work, but to hate coming home. Or maybe you love being at home and you hate going to work. Again. 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 I had a coworker once. He worked extra long hours just so he could stay at work so he didn't have to go home. And sometimes you can feel like such a winner at work. Everybody respects me there. And then sometimes you feel like such a loser at home. Or vice versa. I remember when I was young, one of my mentors giving me some great advice. I was struggling with this balance in home life. I was in school at the time, and I did a lot of work at the church, and I did very little work with my school. And Paul told me, he said, save some for home. I've been making the mistake of pouring all of my energy into the ministry, into the work that I was doing, but not much energy into my schoolwork. And his advice, it helped me to correct that. He told me, David, you can't come home and check out like you're done for the day, right? You're checking in as a husband or a father, and this is where the important work begins. And this is Joseph's story. Professionally, things are exceptional, but his family dynamics, they're still unresolved. They're complicated, to say the least. And Joseph begins to serve in this new appointment, but he still lives with the complications of his personal life. And we know that Joseph is wrestling in all of this because, well, just by the names that he gives his children. In Genesis 41, verses 15 and 52, it says this. I want to read it. Genesis 41. During this time, before the famine years, two sons were born to Joseph and his wife. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Joseph named his older son Manasseh, for he said, God made me forget all my troubles and everyone in my father's family. And Joseph named his second son Ephraim. For he said, God made me fruitful in this land of my grief. The names of his children teach us that although Joseph would possess the outward measure of success that ought to make him happy, he still remembers the brokenness of his family. He's still processing the pain and the trauma of his past. He still remembers, and he's obviously still struggling with it. So he names one child Manasseh. God made me forget all my troubles, all my father's household. Strange name. And he named the second one Ephraim. God made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. The mental and physiological, the psychological trauma of being isolated, rejected, abandoned, having to be disconnected for over 13 years has taken a toll on him. He's building his new family. But it's not without struggles as he works through the pain of his past. And I'm reminded of this. Just because it's in the past, just because it happened before, it doesn't mean that it's only in the past. The pain of the past is still part of this present life. And here we have Joseph. He's still processing. He's still building this new life, but his past is still part of his current story. And I believe deep down in his heart, he still longs for the restoration of his family. One of the keys to life is learning how to deal with your past in healthy ways. And maybe because he's very high up in the government, he greatly benefits from the counseling or the therapy or whatever they had back then to process his past and the trauma he's experienced. I don't know if he had that access to a counselor or a therapist, but he had to navigate through it the best that he could. And I know many of us sitting here are blue-collar folks, and we think, a counselor, yeah, right. Like, I'm going to share my story to someone else who doesn't even know me. Sometimes it takes a conversation with someone who doesn't know you for you to be able to open up, even to yourself. Sometimes we think these thoughts and we push them away. No, that's not. No, I can't go there. And sometimes sitting with someone who's a stranger over the internet on a video call and will never see you in normal life is just the right person to draw that out and for you to say, I can deal with this. I can go to that no-go zone and I can sweep those cobwebs out of the corner. I see a counselor. My wife sees a counselor. Danny sees a counselor. We've made it important as pastoral leadership to put that in our lives, whether we see that we need it or not. Because often the things we struggle with are things that we can't deal with on our own. It's incredibly important to cultivate safe spaces to process your past, your feelings, your emotions, your decisions, so that you can stay ready for all that God wants you to do. Now, Joseph has been in prison for over 7 years, and now he's moved to this position of power in the government, and he's seen 7 years of plenty. But these 7 years have ended, and a severe famine has hit the land, just as God predicted. A famine comes in, and the famine is incredibly severe. He's now been in Egypt for over 20 years. 20 years since his brothers sold him in slavery. And the famine is so severe that according to Genesis 41, verse 56 and 57, the entire world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph. The famine had impacted that entire region. It's under these circumstances that the famine also hit Canaan, Joseph's old town. So because of the famine, Jacob, Joseph's father, sends his sons to Egypt to go get grain for their survival. They have no idea who's in charge in Egypt, and Joseph has no idea that they're coming. And one day, 20 years from the last time they met, Joseph is at work on his normal day distributing grain to whoever comes to him. And totally unexpected, his brothers show up in line looking for grain. Wow. He recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And I can't imagine how he feels when they show up and he sees them. Right after all this time, he comes face to face with them. And I'm certain that he has all kinds of emotions that he can hardly believe. And famine has driven them to Egypt, and Joseph happens to be the one in charge of all the distribution of food. So Joseph's got to compose himself, get himself together. This one encounter in chapter 2, it leads to another encounter in chapter 43, and then another one in chapter 45, and he finally makes himself known and expresses his forgiveness towards them. Because you never know how life will turn out. So you must be open to the will of God in everything. I think Joseph knows this. So even though it's been incredibly traumatic for him, he's seeking to forgive his brothers because he wants to honor God in his life. He shows you and me this priceless lesson on forgiveness. And forgiveness is emotional. The second time that his brothers came before Joseph for requesting food, he's been talking with them and they don't know it's him, and he knows it's them, and he wants to reveal himself to them, but he doesn't know if he can trust them. Have you been in those conversations? I want the best for you, but I'm not certain you want the best for me. I don't know if we're in this together. It's a very one-sided relationship in the past. So Joseph keeps asking them questions, keep trying to see how they'll respond. And he ends up trying to keep his littlest brother, Benjamin, with him and send the rest of them away. But when he suggests that Judah, he gives this passionate plea about his father needing to see Benjamin. He sees Judah's love and care and compassion for his father, a sacrificial attitude. Take me instead. Don't take my youngest brother. It seems when Joseph sees the sincerity in his heart, he can't hold back any longer, and he falls to pieces. He starts weeping, and he weeps so loudly that people outside the home, and I would assume Joseph had a big home ruling over all of Egypt, outside the home, they hear his cries. You see, the first two occasions when Joseph wept, when he met his brothers, they were in private. He left the room, but he, after hearing Judah's plea, he weeps publicly, right in front of his brothers. He's so broken. Someone said, emotions are the language of the soul. Sometimes we must be honest about how we're feeling. And that mixture of disappointment and frustration and anger and sadness and hurt and all piles up and it just comes out. And if we're going to be godly people, if we're to go where God calls us to go, to be who he created us to be, we have to learn how to be honest about our feelings. Carry authenticity. I'm not asking you to air out your dirty laundry and come and just be a burden on everyone. But often we put on our Sunday best because we want the best for God. We want to give him our best. And so we pretend, put on the Barbie plastic smile, and act like nothing is wrong in life. But God has called us to be honest with our emotions. Forgiveness is grace-based. I'm sure you all know this. It's not something you can ever earn. Chapter 45, verses 3 through 5. His brothers didn't earn his forgiveness, but Joseph favorably grants it to them. And here's what he says to them. Chapter 45, in the middle of verse 4. I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery. But don't be upset. Don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place, because it was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. Forgiveness is always grace-based. Meaning that a person cannot earn their way towards it. Sure, the change of behavior helps. That makes this a little bit easier, but it's still totally at Joseph's direction for him to choose to forgive his brothers. Joseph had to make the choice. He could have chosen otherwise, but he chose forgiveness. Joseph doesn't even recite all the ways that they wronged him. He could have reminded them of everything they had done and how it impacted them. He could have unleashed the whole story of all the horrible things in his life. Everything. But Joseph makes a choice, and he chooses to forgive his brothers. And he doesn't have to. But Joseph's relationship with God is so important to him, so impacted by God, that he refuses to let the hurt that they caused shape his life. He chooses to no longer hold on to the hurt, the bitterness, the pain. And instead, he releases it all to God, and he forgives them. See, Joseph, he has the power to make them suffer for what they've done to him. But in verse 5, he says, don't be distressed, don't be angry. He chooses not to use his power to hurt them, but instead to help them. His brothers, they're probably terrified of him. Like when you read through the story with the cup in the saddle and, oh no, what's going to happen? They're going to think we're thieves, we'll be imprisoned forever. And he tells them, instead, come close. Instead of pushing them away. Forgiveness can even lead to reconciliation. Joseph longs to have his family back in his life, but nothing much happens without forgiveness. It always starts with forgiveness. Forgiveness is the first step towards the restoration of any relationship. If there is no forgiveness, there can be no restoration, there can be no reconciliation. The forgiveness happens first. Perhaps Joseph's been working through this, processing his forgiveness for quite a while. Perhaps he's forgiven them years ago, just never had contact with them to be able to tell them. But right here, as we read it, he's now processing it again in front of them. But here's what I love about the character of this godly man. Joseph doesn't stop there. He doesn't just forgive. He moves from forgiveness and reconciliation, and then he goes and he seeks to restore the relationship. He doesn't have to do any of this. But this is where God is leading him. Joseph's watched his brothers closely in the last couple of visits and overheard their conversations about him and seen how they pleaded for Benjamin and heard how they talked about their father. And now he perceives that they're not the same men that they were 20 years ago. And so he wants to restore the relationship. Maybe in your own life, there's a relationship that you need to restore. Maybe there's someone that you need to forgive. Maybe God might be using Joseph's story to help you see this, to forgive and reconcile with family members or others, because this is the way God is leading you. You see, Joseph invites his brothers to move to Egypt. Bring your families, and I want you to live near me in the region of Goshen. And Joseph is so gracious to them that they have a hard time even comprehending how this kindness comes. They're in shock at his generosity and his graciousness towards them. And Joseph reaches the most important speech in the entire narrative. And I want to read it because right there in Genesis 45, he begins to tell his brothers everything. And he didn't say it just once. He says it four times. Verse 5, God sent me ahead of you. In verse 7, God sent me ahead of you. In verse 8, you have not sent me here, but God. And then in verse 9, God has made me master over all the land of Egypt. God, 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 God. Joseph declares that God has a purpose on his life, and God has been at work. God has a purpose in your life. And God has been at work. He is at work. Your actions may have meant to harm me and cause to hurt me, but your actions, God used them for purpose in my life. And he points his brothers to the best place that you can point anyone ever. To the sovereignty of God. Yes, his brother's actions hurt him deeply. But because God is sovereignly ruling and reigning over all, even with his brother's actions, God was able to work in his life and achieve greater purpose. And perhaps Joseph didn't see it all the time. Maybe it wasn't always this way. But now in this moment, he captures for us what has sustained him in his life. He's learned to keep his focus. And church, today, if you get nothing else that I say, teenagers, write it in your notes. The most important thing, I want you to hear this. Keep your focus on God. He will stabilize you. Keep your focus on God. He will center you. Keep your focus on God. He will give you steadiness. Maybe you feel like Julia in our storybook, and you keep building and you keep trying, and over again the waves keep crashing in, and then you're faced to start again. So keep your focus on God. He will stabilize you. There's another story in the Bible of a man who faced similar tragedy. And this is what Job does when, after suffering catastrophic losses in his life, he lost his children and his wealth and his reputation and his health, and he's struggling through wondering, why God would you let this happen to me? And then he gets to the end of the book in Job chapter 42, verse 2, and this is what he declares. Speaking to God, and he says, I know you can do anything, and no one can stop you. The waves might come, and they'll crash on your sandcastle. Wash it out to sea. The emotions might rise again, and the relationship is still strained. And you keep sharing the story of the gospel, and they won't hear it. And you try again and they won't hear it. And now it's gone to this place where don't ever speak to me again on that topic. And you keep pointing to the truth and you keep choosing and they choose not to listen. The relationship is broken. So here's the challenge. Refuse to stop praying. Everything begins with prayer. Refuse to stop praying. Everything begins with prayer. When we keep our focus on God, we can attest, just like Paul wrote in Romans 8, 28, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes. This is an embodiment of that, the story of Joseph. When Joseph was rejected by his brothers, it was his faith in God that sustained him. When Joseph was falsely accused, it was his faith in God that sustained him. When Joseph was imprisoned, it was his faith in God that sustained him. When Joseph was away from his family and friends, it was his faith in God that sustained him. When Joseph was in this position of power, it was his faith in God that sustained him. And when Joseph was interpreting dreams, it was his faith in God that sustained him. Are you catching the story? When Joseph was forgiving his brothers, it was by his faith in God that sustained him. When Joseph refused to retaliate to his brothers, it was his faith in God that sustained him. And when Joseph was finally reunited with his family, it was his faith in God sustained him. There wasn't a moment in Joseph's life where his faith in God was not the sustaining factor for life. That's exactly what faith does. Faith anchors us. Faith gives us hope. Faith restores. Faith reminds. Faith transforms us. Faith will do the same thing for you. When we put our faith in God, it changes everything. Remember, God is at work. God has always been at work. No one can stop it. No one can take credit for it. No one can overtake it. No one can undo it. Do you hear that? No one can overrule it. No one can reverse it. So we can trust God through everything we face in life. Everything. Tim, would you come? Here's how I want to close. There are two specific people in this room that I think God is speaking to. We address one of them already right after the song service. It's in our story of the sandcastle. I've just been building this life, God. I've been trying to be obedient to you, and it keeps crashing down. And I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do next. It's all falling apart. I got nothing. You're my only hope, right? Jesus, you're my only hope. So if you're one of those people where you're like, I came to church out of obedience because I have to, because I know it's right. Or I came to church in one last effort to say, give it one more try, Jesus. He wants to meet with you today. So Tim's going to play some notes on the guitar, give us some atmosphere. And I want to open the altar space. I want you to come and lay your burdens down. And say, Jesus, I'm on this circular roller coaster, merry-go-round of life, and I'm back at the beginning again. And here I am, just me and you. I will put my trust in you again. I will anchor myself to you and make you the foundation. God, I'm all yours. No matter what comes, if I have to go through this circle another 10 times. That's the first call. The first group of people. I want you to come for that. But there are a group of you here who have learned that lesson. It's not that there won't be trials again and you won't have to go through it again. We all know that. Joys of being human. But you also know broken relationships because you've been through this circle. And you have friends and family, maybe someone really close to you. Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it's a son, daughter. Maybe it's a close friend. They don't want anything to do with God. Don't even give me that anymore, Mom. I don't want to hear it. If you bring it up again, I will not talk to you. You're not allowed to share that with the grandkids. And if that's you, right, the first group of people, Jesus, I need your help in my life. The second group of people, God, I need your help in this relationship. Because it begins with prayer. God, will you come in, intervene, and will you bring salvation to my husband? Will you bring salvation to my son? Will you bring salvation to my brother? God, I have been praying for my neighbor for 5 years now, and I can't even talk to him across the fence. Will you intervene? So if either of those reasons, both of those, are a prayer request for you, I want you to get up out of your seat, and I want you to walk to the front as an act of faith, saying, God, I will trust in you. And I want you to come up here, and I want you to intercede, to pray, to stand on behalf of this between you and God. Right now, go for it. Get up out of your seats. Come and meet where Jesus is calling you to be. I know there's more, and I know it's embarrassing to come to the front, so I'm going to push you. I feel to be pushy today. And I know there are lots of broken relationships in our world. Divorce rate is rampant. We all know of these people who don't put their trust in God. They might believe in what God is, but not believe that God is for them. So come and pray for those people. Come and lay your burdens down at the altar. Okay, here's the last push. If you're still in your seats and you are a mature Christian, you've gone through these trials, you've circled this many times, you've uprighted the boat, it's flipped and you've uprighted it. I want you to come and pray for others. Because we learned this. You're not in this alone. So, teenagers, stand up. Come and pray for someone. Mature Christians, ones who have been here forever, come and pray for each other. Lift each other up in our burdens. And if you're visiting, Watch what the family of God does. How we love each other, how we support each other, how we pray for each other. So Jesus, we come before you because you are Lord of all, because you are King of kings. I sang it today, Jesus, majesty, you are holy. Nothing is like you. And in our story today, we learned that nothing is impossible for you. So Jesus, we bring these people before you, all of these needs. God, we need our family to know you. We need our friends to know you. We need our neighbors to know you. We need it. It's a life and death. It's a future situation that only you can do. So Jesus, would you take these names? Would you take our heart for them? God, would you speak to them with your Holy Spirit? Would you soften the anger, remove the distance? Would you allow us to come close, just like Joseph, and give us the ability to not extend the wrath or the anger or the bitterness or the punishment that we might have been holding on to, but instead to offer the reconciliation and bring the restoration. God, that these relationships would be restored, that the family would move to Goshen and they would prosper and become as numerous as the stars. God, we pray for this kind of salvation that isn't just for the next generation, but for a thousand to come, as you wrote. Jesus, we come before you in great need of your saving grace to be extended again. Through us, through your Holy Spirit, in us, to these people. In your name. Church, you're dismissed. If you need time at the altar, Tim can play all day. This is just a space for you to come and be with others, to come and pray, to come and lay your burdens. But as you go, take some action steps. Remember, God has called us to not just love, because love is a choice, it's an action, to actually move in that action. So as you go and you do that, as you restore these relationships, go and be blessed.